Hello and welcome to the implementation module of the Insulin Resistance Solution Practitioner Training. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and it's really exciting to present this to you because it's where everything we've learned so far is being pulled together. And I'm going to teach you how to guide your clients through what I like to call a 30-day metabolic reset. And it's basically a 30-day period where we're keeping all the things that could affect negatively their insulin receptors, we're keeping those out. We're also avoiding things that raise the insulin levels. So they get a nice period of rest, basically, for 30 days where the insulin levels are kept low and all the factors that damage and desensitize the insulin receptors are kept to a minimum. So as usual, before we begin, just want to make sure that you know that everything that I'm presenting here and everything that you're presenting to your clients is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified health practitioner. It's not medical advice and it's not diagnosis. You're doing some assessments and evaluation and helping them to identify those factors in their diet and their lifestyle and their nutritional status that's impacting their health negatively. And you're educating them about the steps that they can take to correct and restore balance. And when the body's restored to balance, healing can occur. If they're under the care of a medical practitioner, if they're on any medication at all, especially if they're on medications related to blood sugar regulation and blood pressure regulation, you need to make sure that they're doing the program with the knowledge of that practitioner so that that practitioner can help them if they need to have any reduction or change in the medication that they're currently taking. So before we jump right in, I want to do a little bit of a review of where we are in the program. We started out way back when with an introduction, an overview of all the different factors, and we gave you a hint and some highlights of what we're going to be covering in the metabolic reset. We went through assessments. Remember, that was not only the paper and pencil assessments and the online questionnaires, but the various blood tests, and most especially and most important, the blood sugar testing via the glucose meter. We talked about nutrition. We went through some of the supplements that you could get people started on to help to reduce the cravings because they help to restore some of the sensitivity of the insulin receptors. We went through stress and taught you a variety of different things that you can work with your clients. Went through fitness and gave you some very simple things in the fitness realm that your clients can do without having to become a triathlete or a marathon runner or a bodybuilder. Simple things that they could do in the fitness realm to help restore sensitivity of their insulin receptors. We talked about the ever-important sleep and how even one night of bad sleep in a healthy person can create a temporary insulin resistance. So chronic low sleep creates insulin resistance. And finally, we went through timing and how it's not just what you do, it's when you do it that's very important. And now we're going to go through the putting it all into place, how to guide people through a 30-day period where their insulin receptors become happy again and start functioning again. And what to do once you've gotten them through that period, how you transition them out, and how you get them on a maintenance program that maintains healthy blood sugar forever. And after this, we're going to give you some insights as to how you can take this and put it into practice and educate your community and market your program so people are actually drawn to you to get this kind of help. And remember, we keep talking about the five key steps that we've been working through with these five different aspects of lifestyle: increasing insulin sensitivity, decreasing the insulin need, reducing inflammation so that those insulin receptors can be restored to normal functioning, optimizing fat burning and lean muscle mass building, because there's some hormones involved with that that actually need to be balanced in order to get insulin in balance. And then finally, minimizing the impact of candy bar eating effects of stress. These are the steps that have to happen in order for balance to occur. Remember we talked about what's normal blood sugar. This is what we're going to maintain. This is what we're striving for. Not the top, which are the highs, not necessarily the very low, but towards the middle to the low end of the spectrum is what we're looking for. The graph at the top is the glucose levels. And in a normal, healthy person, even if they take a boatload of sugar, their glucose isn't going to go up very high until they do that chronically and then damage the whole system. But in somebody who's healthy, an occasional sugar is not going to send their blood sugars up through the roof. And then the lower curve is actually insulin. And you can see that insulin parallels the glucose in most cases. And in the nutrition module, we talked about a few cases where that doesn't happen and how you have to be careful of certain foods that spike insulin without actually spiking the blood sugar. And finally, really important in everything we're talking about in this talk and in all our other talks is how we're going to break that vicious cycle of the high carbohydrate, high glycemic carbohydrate addiction. Because those high glycemic carbs promote excess insulin, and then the normal cells over time adapt to those high levels of insulin by turning off. And then they require very large amounts of insulin to even open up a little bit. The high insulin leads to hypoglycemia. So they're overproducing the insulin, it overshoots its mark. The hypoglycemia leads to cortisol spikes or adrenaline spikes, which cause muscle to be burned to create new glucose. And they also produces a craving for those high glycemic carbs, which then, if you go ahead and eat, you're back into the cycle. So this whole process is about breaking this cycle. And those five key lifestyle areas that we're going to be addressing. And we're going to go into lots more detail about that right now.
So let me give you an overview of the 30-day plan you're going to be putting people on. Again, it might be longer for some people, it might be shorter for others, but this is the overview, and then we'll just go through the summaries of each in each area. Greens, chia seeds or other omega-3 foods, green powder optionally in the morning within an hour of getting up. I find that that's a really nice balance. You've got the omega-3s, you've got the protein, and you've got all the phytonutrients in the greens and all the minerals that help with keeping your blood sugars balanced. Add walking or low-intensity aerobics, even just getting them to do 20 minutes to a half an hour of walking, or 10-minute bursts of walking were found to be just as effective. So if you say to people, hey, I don't have time for that, hey, well, can you find 5 minutes, 10 minutes? That can be helpful. The burst training, we talked about that in the fitness part, and we gave you lots of videos and things that you can do. Experiment with a cleansing day or day each week. That's for those especially who need to lose a little bit of weight. The ones that are thin may not want to do this, although it can be highly beneficial even for thin people. And that's where it's either all day of just juicing or smoothies. But what's better than all day is to do it where it's a 24-hour period that starts somewhere in the day. So it's not like you wake up in the morning and you don't eat or you do just juicing. You have a normal breakfast, and then you skip lunch and dinner, or you just juice or, you know, blend or something like that, and then you have a normal breakfast the next day. So it doesn't feel like such a burden. You're really only missing two main meals, and it can either be where you do cleansing foods like juices and broths and smoothies, or it could be where you fast with water, and that's called intermittent fasting. And we've got a document that describes in great detail how to do that. But that really helps people when they do that once a week. That really helps to reset things and keep them on track. The stress management, whatever they can do. You may be a stress management specialty. Maybe you have a specific type of meditation that you teach. I give you an example of what I teach, but you can use whatever it is that works for you and for your clients, and always ask them what they're doing and see if that's sufficient or you need to just get them to do more of it. The bedtime by 11 p.m. and then schedule 7 to 9 hours of sleep every night while they're in this 30-day phase can be dramatic, really dramatic. So this is what you want them to do for 30 days. You may have a period of 30 days leading up to this where you're gradually introducing these concepts, and then you go, okay, here's what we want to do, and we're going to do this for 30 days. But you're also going to eat only the foods that keep the blood sugar under 110 at all times. And with this, the recommendations that I've given you, that will happen. So it's a 30-day strict low glycemic diet. No sugar, of course, of any kind. That means agave and maple syrup and all that. No grains, unless it's really clear that they tolerate it, especially in your thinner patients. They may say, well, quinoa is fine. It doesn't raise my blood sugar and gives me that extra bulk and keeps me full. Then that's fine. But for your overweight people or your diabetic or pre-diabetic people, that's going to be problematic if it raises their blood sugar. So 30 days of no grains can be really dramatic. If they're not willing to go 30 days with no grains at all and they're doing quinoa, things like that, just make sure they're not doing any flours like pastas and breads. That's can be problematic. Potatoes tend to spike blood sugars high, so we avoid those. We avoid bananas and other high glycemic fruits. So mangoes, papaya, pineapple can be on that list. And you remember when we went through the whole process of getting them to do testing. So they're going to know what these foods are. If you've got somebody who doesn't want to do the pricking of their finger, then you give them the most strict thing to follow. And it's a 30-day metabolic reset. And no dried fruit and no fruit juice because those are treated by the body just like sugar. If they tolerate low glycemic fruits, small quantities, the berries are usually good. For some people, the green apples. For some people, not all, the grapefruits. I've had a lot of my patients who just can't tolerate grapefruit. It shoots their sugar up to 185, so you avoid it. So any other foods that you need to have them avoid would be heated oils and trans fats, because those are inflammatory and those are going to damage the insulin receptors. And remember, we're trying to heal them. The reason for the strict low glycemic diet is to give the cells a break from insulin. They've put up their hands and said, I'm resistant now because they've had so much insulin for so long. And you're just trying to give them a break. So you don't want to have any of these insulin surges. You want to eliminate their top allergens and any known allergens. You'd be surprised at how many people will come to you and say, oh, I'm allergic to watermelon. Whenever I eat it, I break out in hives. And you go, oh, well, how often do you eat it? Oh, not that often, maybe once a week. It's like, really? You think that's okay? No, it's not. When you know that something they're allergic to, you need to stop it because it's causing inflammation. And if it's causing external inflammation like hives, it's for sure causing some inflammation internally with all those histamines floating in the system. And then anything that raises their blood sugar above 110, even if it's an avocado and that raises their blood sugar above 110, or it's lettuce. Now, here's the caveat with this, and here's the exception to this. You have somebody who's a diabetic whose fasting blood sugar is 120. You're not going to get them down to 110 right away. So you've got to work within the range. So you have them chart and you see what their ranges are and you have them avoid foods that raise their blood sugar more than 20 to 25 points. So if their fasting blood sugar is 120, you're going to say, okay, you're not allowed to eat any foods that raise your blood sugar above 140 to 145. And that way they're going to be getting it, they're going to be affecting a change overall, because of course you can't get somebody who starts at 130 to be below 110 of all times. That would be their dream. Okay, but we're talking about people who are marginally insulin resistant or are truly insulin resistant but haven't jumped over into the diabetic range. If they're into the diabetic range, you need to be a little bit different criteria here. Here are the foods as a review, the top six allergens. I always get them off of the top six allergens for 30 days if I can get them to do it. Gluten, dairy, corn, soy, eggs, and peanuts. Some people have problems with others, the runners-up, the others that are high and popular on the allergy list, shellfish, tree nuts, strawberries, citrus, oats, and yeast. But with tree nuts, I want to say, people do this great. Doctors don't really understand a lot about the allergies that cashews are not in the same family as macadamia nuts. So if somebody's allergic to macadamia nuts, it doesn't mean they have to avoid cashews. If they're allergic to almonds, it doesn't mean they have to avoid pine nuts. They're different families. So somebody just says across the board they're allergic to tree nuts, I'm highly suspicious. It's rare. Okay? And I had somebody who started the program exceptionally allergic to lemon. So she was like, all your drinks have lemon in them. What am I going to do? And we said, okay, we'll try the apple cider vinegar for that sour instead of the lemon. And she did that, and she did the whole program, and she lost weight, and she got her sugars under control, and voila, now she can eat citrus. She has no problem eating citrus. So she cleaned things up, and now she, so this is not permanent. So I'm going to talk to you in about a minute now. We're going to move into what's the maintenance phase. So once they've done this for 30 days, do you say, okay, 30 days is over, go at it and do whatever you want? No, you don't want them to backtrack. So in order for them to be ready for the maintenance phase, they need to have had at least 3 weeks of stable glucose, under 110, and rarely, if ever, below fasting level within two levels, meaning they're not going into reactive hypoglycemia. Now, this does apply for your diabetics, because obviously if somebody's been diabetic, they're not going to reverse it in 30 days. I've seen major shifts in 30 days. They may not shift it completely, although I could tell you a couple of stories of people who did. I had one guy whose fasting was 220. Within 2 weeks of us working together, his fasting was like 90, and he had even had dips down into the 70s. So it can happen quickly, but with the diabetics, you may have to have them on this program longer. But if once they get to the point where there's 3 weeks straight of stable glucose, where they're not going above 110 and rarely, if ever, below fasting, and they're consistently taking their basic supplements, like we talked about chromium and magnesium and DHA, possibly some of the other things, the other foods and herbs like berberine and olive leaf and lipoic acid and some of the others, then they have to be consistent. They're fairly consistent. It means they're not 100% necessarily, but they're fairly consistent on the exercise, stress, and sleep, and they're noticing improvements. Like I had one person came, you know, after a month I saw her, and it was like, whoa, what have you been doing? And she looked at me, she goes, I'm doing your program. This was somebody who was on my group program, and she had signed up online, and she came to a couple of events, and I had seen her a month before, and I just, my head dropped, because it was like, whoa. Yeah, she dropped like 23 pounds and 9 inches in a month. It was crazy, but it happens. So they're fairly consistent, and they're noticing improvements. It's either their weight is improved, their brain fog's improved, their energy's improved. Overall, they're feeling better. Their glucose numbers are improved. It's not going to necessarily be all of them. So then you're ready to help them to move back in. But I will caution you, there are certain foods that it's best for them to continue to avoid for life. And those, what are those? Sugar and all its relatives. With an occasional hint of some unrefined sweetener in an otherwise healthy food. Like, so say they're having some, you know, tart that grandma made, grandma probably wouldn't make it, it's probably one of their friends who are into health food, made that has a pinch of honey in it. And it's otherwise, it's got, or it's a smoothie that has a pinch of honey and it's got all kinds of greens. But overall, they should be avoiding sugar, right? Test and don't make it a habit. So if you are going to try something that has a little honey in it, test the blood sugars. And if you get away with it, yeah, but don't make it a habit because you're going to go back into the problem. Pasteurized fruit juice. Nobody should eat pasteurized fruit juice. Even unpasteurized, like fresh squeezed fruit juice, I don't think it should be eaten alone, drunk alone. I think it should be drunk as part of, say, a green juice, like 20% or less of a green juice, if they tolerate it. Okay, flour, even the whole grain flour, because the body handles it like sugar and it shoots those sugars up. There may be some exceptions, but also baked flour products contain acrylamide, and that's a known carcinogen, and it causes inflammation, right? We're trying to get their inflammation down. Heated polyunsaturated oils and trans fats, nobody should eat those. They're just bad foods, right? Nobody should eat those. Nobody disagrees about that either, right? Shortening, mayonnaise, margarine, the chips that say partially hydrogenated soybean oil. Gluten. I think most people who have come to the stage where they're having the problems that you're dealing with probably should avoid it unless you've tested them and found themselves to be unreactive. So you've gotten a stool test or you've gotten one of those panels from Cerex Labs that does 20 different antigens, and they're non-reactive and they're asymptomatic. And I put the links to the labs that you can get those tested at, Intero Lab or Cerex Labs. All their known allergens, unless they've discovered they could put it back in because they've healed their leaky gut, just stay away from them. And then if they're going to eat animal products, eat real animal products, whole, pastured, organically raised. Don't eat the luncheon meats and the stuff processed with all kinds of stuff. So these are the things I don't think people should eat at all. Probably nobody should eat, but especially somebody who's coming off of a gluten insulin resistance. So let's talk about the stuff they can add back. We want to get them on the upswing. So when you're reintroducing foods, you'll start with the lowest sugar to highest. What you have on your page is a really cool chart I put together that says a really good recommendation about how to introduce and how to teach them to introduce back. Small amounts of fruits can be used in smoothies or with greens on top of salads to start. So they start with the fruit in a way that's less likely to raise their sugars, and they work up towards increasing it to find their tolerance level. So, for example, if I sit down and eat, I took a mango and I cut it in half, and I took half the mango and I cut it into small pieces and I ate it on a bed of lettuce. And my sugar was fine. It didn't raise my sugar above like 105. So then I got greedy another time and I put the whole mango on a smaller bed of lettuce and my sugar went up too high. I tried the half a mango by itself and it went up way too high. So I wasn't ready. Find a way that they can do it. One way I find to still have the pleasant taste of the fruit without it being blended up and tasting like something else was I would have two or three pieces of that crispy romaine lettuce and then have some of the fruit and then some crispy romaine lettuce and then some of the fruit. So as long as they're doing it with something that's green and helps to absorb it better and slow it down, they usually can get away with it. But again, to tolerance, you guide them through this. This is a process and you're there as their coach. Want to go slowly. Tell them not to go and, you know, eat a whole banana if they want to test banana. Try it with a small piece of banana with some lettuce. And then the next time they could have more. And they're going to find their tolerance and what they can do. And I'm fine with them having as much fruit as they can get away with to comfortably keep their system functioning and purring. How do you know, do they have to take these supplements for life? Maybe. Some of them do. Do they have to take them for a prolonged period? Maybe some of them do. So here's how you know if you could start to decrease the doses of those supplements. If they're maintaining their blood glucose under 100 most of the time and rarely over 110, if their fasting blood sugar is consistently in the 80s or 70s, if they don't have dips in their fasting glucose levels 3 to 5 hours after their meal, and if their symptoms are improving and they say, you know, I'm really tired of taking these 4 chromium pills every day. Can I reduce it? Yeah. So what do? Do you say, stop it and let's see what happens? No, you don't, because that's what patients want to do. They just want to stop it. I see people all the time that have been on these great protocols and then they come see me like 3 months after they stopped it and they're feeling like crap again. No, don't let them do that. So then the typical supplements that we had them on to start was chromium polynicotinate 400 micrograms twice a day. So if they're on that, or 200 micrograms 4 times a day, you just have them go to 3 times a day. So you have them go to 600. And they do that for a few days and monitor and see how are they feeling. Are they gaining weight? Are they having more brain fog? Is their blood sugar going up? How's their fasting blood sugar? How is it after meals? If it's fine, then you can go and reduce their magnesium a little bit. You can have them reduce their DHA a little bit. And it's a reminder here, the vanadyl sulfate, if you do put them on that, make sure you just do it 50 milligrams twice a day for 4 weeks, because beyond that, you can get into problems with kidney. It's an overload. The DHA, you know, they may need that permanently if they're not consistently eating foods that, like algae and fish, that contain that. So these are the supplements, and you're just going to gradually decrease their dosage. So drop one capsule or one drop dose every 3 to 4 days. Carefully monitor their fasting sugar and their post-meal glucose, you know, the way we always do it, 15, 30, 45, 60, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours at least when you're weaning off again is important to go back there, right? They may have gone to the point where they just tested at 45 minutes, but now you want to go back and just like kind of see what's happening. Weigh them. Have them weigh themselves to observe for an increase in weight. Monitor energy level, mental alertness, and any symptoms that resolved during 30-day metabolic reset. If they're starting to come back, when you start to wean off the supplements, you know that that wasn't a good idea to go back. Okay? And if you do them one at a time and you do them a small amount at a time, they're not going to get into such a downward spiral that they start to reverse. Same thing with the allergens. Here's the list again. And you reintroduce them one at a time. I highly recommend that they be off of gluten for at least 6 months, and under the circumstances I said before, that they've tested and they know they're not genetically prone and they know they don't have the antibodies and they're feeling great, then they can introduce it gradually. Dairy, same way. Corn, you know, the other ones are not as problematic. Peanuts, I don't recommend they do back at all, unless it's on an occasional, like occasionally there'll be a peanut or something in a salad that I'll eat. I don't bother to be as picky about that as I am with gluten, but peanuts are inflammatory, and we know inflammation is a problem here. Okay, so we have a whole process for reintroducing the allergens, and I'm giving you that document on your page. And basically, summary, you make three columns. They have a safe column, a suspicious column, and a problematic column. And as they test foods that they've removed, they put them in either safe. And in order to get in the safe, they have to have eaten it for 3 days straight and not had any symptoms. Okay, introduced it, eaten it for 3 days straight. Suspicious is they've introduced it, and somewhere in that 3 days that they're introducing it, they get a headache or something happens, but it didn't really seem really clear. It could have been something else. Then it's a suspicious food. They're going to go back again. And problematic is they were feeling great and they started to eat eggs and they got a headache and their intestines blew up and they felt awful within a short period of time. It's a problem. Stick it in the list and avoid it. And you might come back and retest it later. You may have to take them through a leaky gut repair protocol. So that's the reintroduction, and that is something that is as important as it is taking them off of things and putting them on a metabolic reset. It's just as important to be really careful about the reintroduction phase. This is not an overnight process. They may get results overnight, but for them to maintain long-lasting, lifelong results, you're going to be with them for a while. You're going to be in their life. What we do is when we take groups through, the program itself goes for about, 10 weeks or so, and then we give them access to our vital community for 2 months, and then we continue to give them access so they can come on and ask questions, so they have access on an ongoing basis. Those people who are in my private programs that I coach with, we're working on this for months. We're just like really going carefully, and sometimes they'll have setbacks, and they come to you and say, look, I'm falling backwards. You're there to help them, and because you understand it. It's really great when you understand how this works.
Let's just finish up with a brief review of the guidelines and the highlights of the guidelines in each of the five main areas we'll be working with people on. Let's start with fitness. And so the highlights of the fitness is burst training, really getting people into the mode that they don't have to be at the gym for 2 hours a day, sweating off their pants to try to get the weight off. What they need to be doing is short bursts of intense activity. And what we recommend are 2 minutes first thing in the morning, 2 minutes before bed, and then 30-second bursts throughout the day, ideally a couple of hours before meals, and 4 to 8 of them daily. These you would do 4 to 5 days a week. You don't want to do it every day. Every other day is fine. Next, we look at moderate intensity aerobics. Again, they don't have to be training for a marathon or a triathlon. Moderate intensity, walking, jogging, cycling, swimming, an exercise class, working on some kind of equipment, 30 to 60 minutes 4 to 5 times a week. 30 minutes is fine for your more sedentary people. 60 minutes is the max it should be, and unless somebody is an athlete in training. But for the average person, it doesn't have to be more than that. And doing it in 10-minute increments 3 times a day is super important, and that's important for you to get across to people. And then adding in some resistance exercise would be nice, ideally 1 to 3 times a week. And we've given you some ideas in the fitness video library. On the diet and nutrition guidelines, we want to avoid the foods that require lots of insulin to manage. So there's a foods to phase out document. Have people hang it on the refrigerator door. Avoid gluten and other allergens. Avoid any foods that cause their blood sugar to go above 110. If they're not testing, only eat the low glycemic foods. So they're going to have to be a little bit more strict. If you can encourage them to test, by all means, I recommend that you do that. And then have them keep eating lots of greens and drinking lots of greens, using chia seeds if they tolerate them, non-starchy vegetables, and healthy fats. Your omega-3s like flax and chia, hemp, walnuts, and your coconut, which has a lot of medium-chain triglycerides and is super, super helpful. And then half the body weight in fluid ounces of water every day. We have a more detailed chart that I'm going to review with you at the very end, and it's a phenomenal resource that you're welcome to share with your clients. A review of the stress and attitude guidelines. I love quick coherence, the heart math, mini vacation as I like to call it, and I like to get to people to do that at least 5 times a day. Before each meal, before getting out of bed, and before going to sleep, minimally. I do it probably dozens of times each day, and it just starts to be automatic whenever you feel yourself getting a little stressed. And that's something that you can teach people how to learn to do that, how to identify when they're going into that stress mode. Because as we remember, that stress mode creates a lot of cortisol, which causes the blood sugar to go up. Learning to identify early on when they're going into autopilot and experiencing the negative effects of stress, and using something called freeze frame to shift. And that's detailed in the 30-day stress transformation package that you have. And you're welcome to go to the HeartMath website and get the books from HeartMath and really, you know, focus in on learning it and how you're going to teach them. Use the power of appreciation and fun to shift perspective. We've given you a lot of resources to share with people on that. And then helping them to acknowledge their accomplishments, connect with their values and visions, and keep their eyes out there on the prize. Whether that prize is that really slim, trim body fitting into the dress or jeans or whatever else they want to fit into, or whether it's like really getting their brain back and starting a business or really excelling in their current position. Or just knowing that they're protecting their insides and they're not at a high risk of heart attack and stroke like maybe their parents. Whatever that prize is for them, it's important for them to keep their eyes on it. And then sleep. For some, this might be the toughest part. I know it is for me. Getting to bed by 11 would be so awesome. 12 at the latest, 10 even more ideal. And then staying in bed at least 8 hours a night, most nights. Some people with really sensitive systems need to be in bed 9 to 10 hours a night. And then helping them to learn how to turn down the activity intensity, starting a couple of hours before bedtime, turning off the TV, dimming the lights, you know, read by candlelight, have a nice romantic time with a partner, get away from the computer. Take a warm bath, not too hot, and listen to soft music. All the things we talked about in the sleep section. And then finally, reviewing the timing guidelines. You hear me say this over and over and over again. Get them to quit eating 3 hours before bedtime to optimize growth hormone and promote fat burning while they sleep. And you saw all those lovely graphs that pointed out why this is important. Something we call burst and burn before bed. About 2 hours after the last meal, at least an hour before bed, do a 2-minute burst of high intensity exercise. Like really go at it, but not for too long. You don't want to raise their core temperature too much and interrupt their sleep. And then extending the time between meals to 5 hours. 4 at the low end, 6 at the high end, but 5 seems to be a nice number. Consuming protein within an hour of waking. Remember how we talked about how that affects the way when the cortisol comes up and it goes after protein to break down to turn into glucose. Give it the protein so it doesn't go after the muscles. Avoid high carbohydrate breakfasts, which causes the leptin to spike too early and then the food cravings to set in the evening. Practice breathing and appreciation before meals to get the cortisol levels down. Commit to getting to sleep no later than 11. Again, we hear that one, right? And then plan fitness bursts 2 hours before each meal. That's a really awesome thing to do because it helps to get the body into fat burning before consuming more food. So that's it for the summaries. And I want to share with you a couple of last things before we close. One, this is a chart that you have in your Metabolic Reset at a Glance document. And it's an awesome chart that I get people to just pin up on their refrigerator. There's the green, the yellow, and the red columns, right? The foods to consume regularly, unlimited amounts, moderate amounts, and to include often as they'd like. The yellow foods, only eat these if the sugar stays under 110 And if they decide not to test their sugar, the yellow becomes red and it's in a food to avoid, okay? You don't want them to take a chance. If they're not willing to test, then leave these things out because these have potential for raising the sugar. And then the foods for everyone to avoid. Even if they've tested and the foods keeps it below 110, it's probably not a great idea, except for the ones that I've noted. You know, like some people need to get the grains or the legumes, especially if they're low body weight and they're trying to keep weight on. That's not the common average person you're going to be dealing with, but believe me, there are those people that are going to be, they're going to be challenging to work with. So the processed foods, the high glycemic foods, all the allergens, the medium and high glycemic fruits, and the dried fruits. And again, of course, fruit juice, fresh or pasteurized, doesn't matter. Fresh squeezed apple or orange juice is just as high glycemic. So this is at a glance. If they just do this, if you can get them to do nothing but this, you're going to get some great results. If you add to this the summary of a few of the highlights in the stress, the sleep, the timing and the fitness areas, you're going to get great results. And finally, a summary chart that you can use with people to help them to come back off the 30-day metabolic reset and start to test to make sure that they continue to maintain good glucose balance. So the yes stuff is the same yes stuff that they were able to have during, right? The unlimited non-starchy vegetables, a moderate amounts of good fats, and then on the testing and using cautiously are some of the things that we had put into the avoid or the be cautious with during the reset. So, of course, the fresh fruits, and I gave you a good rundown of how to test those and use them with lettuce and go slowly, small amounts to start. Because the last thing you want somebody to do after they've maintained a great glucose level throughout the month and gotten the insulin receptors to be more receptive and more sensitive is to suddenly just have three bananas and have the blood sugar go shooting up. You want to go with small amounts. So if the sugar goes up, it's going to be a little bit and you're going to notice it before it goes so high as to start to undo some of the process they've done in the 30 days. Okay. And then the no's, these are the things I think nobody should do ever. Really, white sugar, high fructose corn syrup, hydrogenated oils, all the processed foods, the margarines, the mayonnaise, the deep frieds, the pasteurized juices, refined grains, gluten, and commercial animal products. Absolutely. I think if somebody wants to be healthy, those things need to be avoided. And then there may be some of those things that, if they slip in occasionally, as long as they don't shoot their sugars up, maybe okay, but not to get into a regular habit of using some of the whole sweeteners like honey and maple syrup and dehydrated cane juice and agave. They're still very concentrated sources of sugar with very small amounts of nutrition. The whole grains, being careful with, some people do best to avoid all grains. A lot of people do best to avoid all grains, even the non-glutens. And then fresh fruit juice, if it's occasional in combination with some veggie juice, like, you know, 90% veggie and 10% fruit, might be okay. Again, these are going to be things that are going to be just very, very personal to each individual that you work with. So this is the implementation plan. This is the metabolic reset and how you get them on it and how you get it off it. This is how to put it all into action. This is a summary of everything you've learned. And now it's time to go out and do it. Pick a person, start to work with them, and get some results.